Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Stanislav Zinkarenko. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Have I got it right? I got the name right, haven't I?
Sure.
Excellent, excellent. It's strange to have a name like that in Bordeaux. Where are you from, Stanislav?
I'm Russian origin. I was born in St. Petersburg.
Excellent.
Northwest of Russia.
Northwest of Russia. But now you're in Bordeaux?
Yeah, now I'm in Bordeaux.
And you've got a vineyard here. What's the name of the vineyard?
It's Château La Favière.
Okay. And we've just had a look around. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's a proper Bordeaux chateau. And
thank you.
Fabulous lawns and everything. Look, it's quite a nice...
Not also the lawns, but the vineyards as well.
Yeah, the vineyards.
In particular.
Yeah, the vineyards are looking pretty nice. Quite interesting, actually. I've been touring around Bordeaux today, and I've been to quite a few chateaus. Well, not chateaus, but I've been to quite a few vineyards. And you're probably the most experimental, I think. But at the same time, you know, everything looks very traditional here. So I think what I'd like to do, if it's possible, is just maybe talk about some of the innovations you've done since you've been here. Because you've only been in the vineyard for how long?
Started with this vineyard in November 2010, so it's almost 6 years.
Yeah.
So what kind of innovations we made here? First of all, we introduced the three wines instead of just one, which was produced here before. We made we created three different wines.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between them is in the methods of vinification and aging. And what is the most innovative we made here in Bordeaux Supérieur Appellation, it is the integral vinification, which we call vinification intégrale. It means that we do manual harvests from the selected parcels in the vineyard, and then after the sorting, we do integral vinification in the barrels, in the oak barrels.
So you're doing alcoholic fermentation in oak barrels.
Yeah. Which is a little bit unusual for the Bordeaux Superior Appellation because of this, not because of this cost, but because of the, first of all, because of lack of knowledge, probably, and involvement, a lot of involvement of the
labor.
Of the labor, yeah. There is a lot of manipulation you need to do during a day with that. You need to turn the barrels, and then you need to move wine from one barrel to another, etc.
Yeah. And they're all quite small. How big are the barrels? 500 liters?
500 liters of barrels. And on top of that, of course, there is a cost involved. These barrels are much more expensive than the ordinary ones. It means that the cost of your wine in the end will be quite high, and it will be quite difficult for you to sell.
Yeah. It's almost like a garagist wine. You know, it's
probably
where you've taken the wine and you've shrunk the yield. You've done lots of stuff in the winery that adds cost, but then you've got a reasonably simple appellation that you're selling the wine through.
Yeah, probably. Of course, appellation limits. It is our limit. It means that when you look in the wine list in the restaurant, you see if you understand something in the wine, you see the Bordeaux Superior Appellation, and you imagine the price of that.
Mm.
When you see a price which is a little bit different from what you imagine, either it makes interest for you why it is so expensive, either you just pass it and you don't choose. In most of the cases you just pass it and don't choose, and then it is probably work of the sommelier in the restaurant to explain you. And
so it does require quite a lot of hand selling.
Exactly, and we just wanted to create something to prove that we technically can produce quality of Grand Cru, but being in the appellation like Bordeaux Superior. And that is what we tried to prove now to our clients. And these clients, of course, they mostly these are restaurants, they are small wine boutiques. When we work with the people directly, without intermediaries, so we have the opportunity to prove, to show the process, and to convince them to purchase these wines, and I can say that we succeed, the best proof for us is that we, 2011, which was our first vintage of this special cuvée, we sold everything. And at the moment, we sold almost the half of the 2012.
Yeah. And it's not like you've been sitting on the 2012 and 11 for ages. The wines are only just being released, aren't they?
2011 was released. The bottling was 2 years ago. I don't remember. Yeah, it was 2014, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
In 2012, the bottling was just last year.
Yeah, yeah. So you're getting there with the product.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you called it an integral wine. That's the name of the wine. But the method you said was called
integral vinification, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where you've got the barrels. It's always quite funny. I've seen that style before. There's a Saint-Emilion Grand Cru. Yep. I went and visited and I saw it up there. I remember looking at the rollers and trying to roll one of the barrels. And by goodness, it was hard work. You know, they don't want to turn, do they?
Yeah, it is. It's just hard work, yeah.
Yeah. So that's quite interesting. And the other thing that you were doing was most wineries, when they're making the wines, they get each parcel and they'll vinify it, they'll age the wine in barrel, and then they'll do barrel sampling, do an assemblage, and try and work out what components they want to put together. And you're sort of doing it around the wrong way compared to most people.
No, it is not the wrong way. It's just a way to be different. Because when you have thousands of producers and you want to sell, you just be a little bit more different compared to another ones in order to sell. It is also like we discussed in the cellar, starting from 2015 vintage, we started to age the blend, which is already
blended.
Yeah. Yeah, and we see at the moment that we just have a profit for that. Technically, it is easier. It is less risky.
Yeah, why is it less risky? I would have thought if you've got your different components and then you get a dodgy barrel, you can just forget about it or sell it off to someone else.
It is less risky in means of understanding of development of your wine. If you see that, if you taste barrels 1, 2, 3, they will be almost the same, let's say, when you have a blend inside. So it means that you can make your decisions which you make during the aging, they can be faster and more consequence of these decisions are better than, for example, you have, I don't know, let's imagine we have 150 barrels. We have 50 barrels of Merlot, 30% barrels of Cabernet Sauvignon, and 50 barrels of Cabernet Franc. Development of these varieties, which were harvested from different parcels, so in different time, in different weather conditions, it means that even in between 50 barrels of Merlot, one-third can develop in one way, one-third in another way, and another third in a third way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so your decisions which you make for some actions, first of all, you need to taste everything in order to make right decision. Then you need to make three decisions instead of just one. So this is what I call less risky. So we can interact and we can act faster and more efficient. And the development of wine during aging is more transparent.
Yeah, okay. So the barrels are similar in styles. Yep. Do you blend everything into one big tank and then you fill the barrels?
Yep, sure.
Okay, so you've got quite a lot of homogeneity with the wines in the barrels.
Sure.
And then the deviation is really about how the barrel responds
exactly,
to the wine.
Exactly. And if you choose right barrel producer, then you can be sure that there will not be a big difference between the barrels.
Because there's always going to be some, but yeah. Okay, then that means that your pre-selection about what wines go into the blend, you have to be quite meticulous about that.
Yeah.
So you need to be very careful about that. You must have to worry about
rot. We need to be very careful in every process of winemaking.
Yeah, yeah. I like the fact you said earlier, you didn't really talk about it much, but you've got an optics table.
Yep.
For your sorting, and they're quite a new piece of kit.
It is not our sorting table because we produce just 120,000 bottles, so we need to calculate our cost. And this is the outsource, which you can find everywhere in the region. There's a thousands producers, and there is a hundred of companies who are where you can outsource equipment which you need not during a whole year, but just once a year. Like for example. Harvesting machine and sorting table.
Oh, okay. So you don't own the optic table?
No. It is not our optic table.
Yeah.
We just use a company which provides us with the service. They provide us with the machine, and they provide us with the team who is operating this machine.
Yeah,
it is the question of the budget you can allow yourself. How much you are ready to spend for the harvesting?
Because
the optic sorting, this machine costing I don't know, for example, 1,000 euro a day, and machine which is simpler, which it will cost you 500 euros a day. That's it.
And then, do you want to explain to people what an optics table is? Because it's reasonably new piece of kit from what I understand. I've only heard about them for the last 3 or 4 years.
We even show the movie which we took during harvest, during our first harvest in 2011 and 2012.
Yeah.
In fact, it is quite an amazing machine. It is quite a long machine. So you put grape straight on this machine, and there is a camera on top. So the grape starts moving, and there is a camera on top with the optical eye, which is looking on the carpet of the grape, and then you just pre-select. You type on the panel what do you like to have, for example. Black grapes, because sometimes there could be some grapes which are not matured, so they are green.
Yeah.
Or you would like to have the grape of the particular size, not less than. Or you'd like to have only grape which is not damaged.
Mm-hmm. Or mold, mildew.
Yeah. And there's a camera, and this camera looks on this carpet of the grapes, and it's. It makes thousands, I don't know, millions decisions a second, and it says to the machine. It makes comments to the machine. This grape goes left. This goes right. That's it.
Yeah. So it's all electronic, and it just does its job, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you must be able to sort at a finer level than maybe with manual sorting, or at least faster, anyway.
It is a very good question. It's if you harvest manually or you harvest by machine, because. Mm. If you harvest by machine, and we harvest by machine most of our crop, visually the result is the same like we harvest manually. So it looks like thousands of grapes, of nice quality grapes. They are not damaged, etc., etc. It is the same. But we still continue to use manual harvest for our special cuvée. And the same for the sorting. Of course, I think when you touch by your hand the grape, it is better. If machine does that instead of you, it is a question of the cost or the price.
Yeah. Which is cheaper, manual harvesting or machine harvesting with optics?
Of course, machine harvesting.
With optics?
Harvesting, it is machine which doing harvest, it is one machine. And sorting, it is another machine. So
there's
two machines. Yep.
But if you do a manual harvest, normally you'll do the sorting as you go through the harvest. So you've got manual harvest, which has sorting built in, versus machine harvesting, where you do machine harvesting and then you're doing sorting afterwards. So
it is still cheaper than if you use manual on both sides.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so machine harvesting with optics is the way to go in terms of cost and quality.
For us, it was the best solution to find the best formula of quality and cost.
I imagine in a really tough year when there's a lot of disease, like 2013 or something like that, you know, you're going to, that type of optics will be brilliant because you can just make sure you only get clean fruit.
Not sure, because when you have a lot of disease, it is the, I will choose manual harvest. The man who sees by his own eyes and who makes decision whether to cut the grape or not.
Mm-hmm.
This is the best sorting which could be. When the grape is already cutted, it is already harvested.
Yeah, yeah.
The people cannot select it better than the harvester on the field.
Yeah.
So in, and I could tell you that, for example, in 2013, which was a terrible year, we still used the manual harvest, even mostly because of the diseases, mostly because of we needed to select in the field what to cut, what not.
Yeah. The main grapes you've got, you're saying, is it's 60% Merlot, around 30% Cab Franc, and about 10% Cabernet Sauvignon, but you've just recently planted up with a little bit of Malbec.
Yeah, we planted it in 2012.
Yeah, what was the thinking behind that? Because you could have planted Carmenere or Petit Verdot or more of the same of what you've got. Why were you thinking about Malbec?
It is just a question of the taste. Decision was in between three. We chose between Malbec, Petit Verdot, and Syrah. Syrah, we could not use because in that case we will lose rights for the appellation Bordeaux et Bordeaux Supérieur.
Syrah is not allowed in the appellation.
Yeah, Syrah is not yet allowed. There is some studies.
Do you think it will be allowed?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, no.
I don't know. Then, as far as Petit Verdot in Malbec is concerned, it is my personal taste. Let's say wine. Always, it is very personal.
Yeah,
it is your personal decision when you do blend. It's only you who decide because it is your own risk. If you are a winemaker, it is your own risk. If decision was wrong, it will be you who will lose the money because you cannot sell because the decision was wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
The same was decision for between Malbec and Petit Verdot. I would prefer Malbec than Petit Verdot, and I would prefer Merlot as a majority of the blend. So that's why I knew that if we choose Malbec, we will add just a little bit, just a small percentage, 1% probably, in the blend, in order to put some spices.
Malbec's quite a deep colored grape variety as well, so you might get a little bit more color coming through.
Probably. We don't know yet because for the first time we harvested it in last year.
Yep.
For the blend we made, we did not put any kind of Malbec yet because there is really very small quantity. So we will put it later in 1 year from now, and then we'll see.
See what happens.
Yeah.
Okay. And that, just the last question. You know, you said you've got about 10% Cab Sav in the vineyard, but you're also saying it's getting quite old. You know, it's about 50 years old. Is that right?
Some of the vines we have, they are more than 50 years old. Yeah,
that's starting to get quite old. Usually people pull out the old vines and put new ones in simply because your yield decreases so much that it becomes economically unviable. Why are you not changing it over?
Because surprisingly, it is not yet the case for us. We are very much surprised because when we arrived here in 2010, it was our goal in the next year, in 2011, to replant this parcel of Cabernet Sauvignon, which was in that time, it was 47 or 48 years old, something like that. After the harvest of 2011, we were surprised by the quantity and quality, and it repeated in 2012, and it continues. So even in 2015, it was good.
Yeah.
Of course the quantity, the volume is a little bit less than another one, but it's a little bit less. It's not two times less.
Yeah.
So we decided to keep it. If we see that it changes, then we will replant it.
Yeah, you might find when you do finally replant it that it will struggle to ripen in the early days as well because older vines tend to ripen a little bit better.
Yes, but you can always play. Of course, you can play with the yield, but Cabernet Sauvignon, which we have just 10%, so it does not affect so much. Then we started to increase the planted surface. 2 years ago, we purchased 10 hectares of the land. It wasn't planted. And last year, we started to plant this land. We do it step by step in according to the authorizations we receive from the government for the planting. And we planted also Cabernet Sauvignon. It means that this year, it's already second year. and mm-hmm. we will be legally able to harvest for the first time in 2 years from now.
Yep.
So it means that if we take decision to replant Cabernet Sauvignon of 55 years old in 2 years from now, we will have another Cabernet Sauvignon, which just arrived.
Yeah, yeah.
And we will not lose in terms of...
I'd give it a year or two to see how the new stuff compares to the old stuff before you rip it out. Okay, now that's all pretty cool. Just to recap, you've got three wines, like a ladder. What are the wines again?
We produce three wines, yeah. Our main wine, it calls Chateau La Favière.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have our second wine, which is a little bit more easy to drink.
Yeah. No oak in it.
Yeah, no oak, which name is Muse de La Favière.
Yeah.
And we produce this special cuvée, which we talked a lot. This name of this is Chateau La Favière Cuvée Integral.
And is the wines available in the UK?
At the moment, not. In the past, we had an importer. We don't know, in fact, if this importer still exists.
Oh, okay.
So he ordered just once, and then we lost the contact with them.
Yeah.
So at the moment, we are really looking for the importer in
England. Okay, and where do you export the wines, to the US or other countries?
In fact, everywhere. We work a lot with the Japan, with US, with all over Europe. We work a lot, we sell a lot in France, in Germany, Holland, in Belgium. We started with the Hong Kong. We started with the China this year. Even with Vietnam, a little bit we sell to Russia, but unfortunately we do not have still don't have import in England. And we'll be happy to have it.
I'm sure you will. The wine's pretty excellent. Excellent then, Stanislav. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Cheers, bud.